So we're talking about Mount Stirling and the threat to by logging. People would generally believe that the old growth forest in Victoria, as it is left, is protected because there's going to be logging ban by January 1st, 2024. Can you explain what's really going on?
Well, I suppose they're still concerned. So logging operations are still allowed, though there's some constraints due to court orders. We have continued with partners to do citizen science on logging coops across the state, and we are concerned that there still will be some logging potentially. And one site we've been particularly concerned about is Mount Stirling, or it's the piece of land between the Mount Stirling Alpine Resort and the Alpine National Park. It's still state forest, and there are a number of coops up there or logging areas that were scheduled, and we'd had word that Vic Forests had approached the Alpine Resort to use their roads, and so we're concerned that that area may be targeted in a sort of last-ditch effort to undertake logging. We'd found five threatened plants that are listed under state environment laws, and so I've highlighted that and called for Vic Forest not to let it happen.
We'll talk about those endangered species. It's always great to hear the names of them, things that you don't know anything about. Lilac bitter cress, fringe riced flower, hairy eyebright, ovens everlasting and royal grevillea. What fabulous names.
Indeed, and it's often the animals that get a lot of attention, but the plants are just as important. And in these places, which are quite high and quite unique patches of bush, there's been a long-standing campaign to try and get that piece of state forest between the Alpine Resort and the Alpine National Park established as a either part of the park to ensure that it's protected, and there's a clear sort of biolink between the Alpine National Park and the Alpine Resort. And it's quite unusual forest in lots of ways. It's mixes of alpine ash and mountain gum and snow gum, perfectly unsuitable for logging. Since this issue's been raised, though, Vic Forest says they have no intention of logging that area, which is good news. But we're just vigilant that there's no sort of last-ditch efforts before the phase-out happens. And I suppose they're keen to see the government actually make a decision on the future of Vic Forest, which they haven't done yet.
Yeah, right. And people are very dubious about Vic Forest because constantly it has in the past failed to do any proper surveying and purely with the idea of logging as much as it can.
Well, that's right. There's been a very sort of vexed track record with Vic Forest. There's been a number of community court cases. There's been huge numbers of, reports on impacts on threatened species. And I think while the decision to end native forest logging is very welcome, there's still a few unknown details in terms of what the transition looks like. One of them is, what's the future of Vic Forests? We also know that not all of the logging's necessarily ending by the 1st of January. There's still logging in the west of the state, which is done under a different type of legal arrangement, will be open until at least June 2024. And so we're concerned about that. I think that probably the ball's in the government's court to make a decision about the future of Vic Forest. It's an institution that's lost sort of social license, and we need to move on.
Can you tell me a little bit about the areas in the west of the state which are under threat?
So there's a couple of two different legal sort of arrangements for logging in Victoria. One involves a thing called an allocation order, which is what the big industrial areas are in the east of the state, and that's managed through timber release plans. And the government committed to the phase out by the 1st of January next year. The west of the state and very small parts of the east is managed under the old Forest Act through forest, what they call forest produce licenses, and there's a sort of plan called the Timber Utilisation Plan. So it's a different system, sort of authorised under a different legislative framework. And in the west of the state, which is very different to the east, so you're talking about the Wombat Forest, Mount Cole, right out to the sort of back of the Otways and right out up to the sort of little desert. It is in a regional forest agreement area, but it's managed through this timber utilisation plan. It's quite a large area. It's about 65,000 hectares of areas actually on the logging schedule. And that's of a concern because these areas are very fragmented. They've got high numbers of threatened species and, you know, some of the most cleared landscapes in the state. And so the bits of forest that are left are critically important.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and as you say, they've become scrappy, but in the past, they were large swathes of forests, weren't they?
Indeed. And so you've got this sort of patchwork of bush out there in, you know, very cleared farming landscapes. And so they're incredibly important. They're different sorts of bush too, you know, drier forests as well as patches of wet forests and things like that. And the methods used under community forestry, they call it, it's a bit of a euphemism, range from sort of firewood related stuff, commercial firewood, right through to clear fell logging at places like Mount Cole, which is also proposed to be a national park. So we don't want to see, you know, the future potential forests. They're worth a lot more standing than they are chopped down, and particularly in those cases around the Wombat and Mount Cole where the government has promised for them to be a national park, but said that they could be logged once. We don't want to see that logging happen now that native forest logging's ending.
Hey, Mount Cole, you mentioned Mount Cole because, of course, Mount Cole is a really important site in Indigenous history.
Indeed, and Mount Cole, Mount Bewangal, there is a proposal for an expansion of the Mount Bewangal State Park, but it also has quite a large number of logging coops in it. And Mount Cole, they do use a form of clear fell logging there, which is very destructive. And it's an important place ecologically as well because it's quite high and it comes out of a sort of a flat plain. And, you know, we know with climate change, a lot of species will need to sort of modify their capacity to deal with changing temperatures. And one way to do that is sort of moving up mountains. And so those mountains, you know, right out to the Grampians, really incredibly important for the future.
Yeah, you talk about the forests around Mount Stirling providing a key link to Alpine National Park and the Mount Stirling Alpine Resort. You're really getting at the integrated nature of the environment, aren't you?
Indeed, and we note from, you know, so there's some historical things about where boundaries are put. The Alpine Resort, Mount Stirling, of course, is, you know, much loved for both cross-country skiers, but it's also ecologically very important. It's reasonably high. The Alpine National Park, of course, is one of the jewels in the crown of our national parks estate. The bit in between, and sort of historically when they designed the Alpine National Park, it was conveniently that often the boundary started at the sort of snow line and the commercial forests were left out. So it's the bit that sort of runs from the sort of higher level through a very deep valley, which has got very interesting streams and waterfalls and quite a few unique species in there as well, like Galaxias, the endangered fish, is the area that we're particularly concerned about. And it will provide a classic important link between Mount Stirling and the Alpine National Park.
Can you give me any understanding of this business about the lawyers from the Environmental Justice Australia filing a ACCC complaint on behalf of the VFA asking for an investigation into Vic Forest's misleading sustainability claims? Why is that important?
I think that one's important because, you know, there's a lot of claims about forestry being, you know, it regrows, it regenerates. We saw all those sorts of claims that have been made repeatedly over the years. But we know from previous sort of investigations by community organisations that things like regeneration don't necessarily happen. So 30% of the areas that have been logged previously are still failing to regenerate. So there's questions about that. The lawyers have provided a detailed application testing that and seeking to see how it fits with consumer law. So that's the case. I'm not sure where it's at the minute.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it sort of leads one to think that if that was provable, then all the resources of Vic Forest should be actually put into remedial work.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's an interesting one. Vic Forests is a state-owned enterprise, so it's got its own special status under Victorian legislation. So it's supposed to be a business. While it's been heavily state subsidised to top up its, and it hasn't really provided an income to the state. With the end of native forest logging, it's probably likely that the turnover. Or the proceeds that came from logging will disappear. Well, that would be the theory, but certainly the subsidy should be available. And look, forests need management, but they don't necessarily need forestry. So there is going to be a need for significant resources to be provided to ensure that our forests are properly managed for a whole lot of values, ecological, cultural, climate, water, recreation.
Now, you're part of the Victorian National Park Association, and as you said, you're working with allies. You're going to, this is a watching brief for you, isn't it, to ensure that Vic Forest doesn't cause any more vandalism within our forests.
Indeed, and so I think everybody's very vigilant to see where they're watching, where the logging schedules are, and where activity is happening. We hope that the wind down is happening as planned, but we don't want to see any sort of additional damage that can be avoided. So lots of groups are out there still doing citizen science and still, keeping an eye, very close eye on what's going on.
It's interesting, the citizen science, because the laws that were passed falsely under these workplace safety arrangements to limit the amount of people who are in coops, how important and how that curtails citizen scientists' work. Have you seen any negative outcomes of that implementation at all?
Yeah, I think people are more cautious. It's a timing question about sort of when what they call safety zones are put in place, which is sort of the legal instrument. So, that has made some groups more hesitant in terms of when they can do surveys and so on. But the survey effort's still continuing.
Yeah, because it's incredibly important, isn't it?
Well, it is because the community groups using citizen science has been a really powerful tool. One, to highlight to the community the importance of the different types of species that we find, ranging from, things with big bushy brown eyes and tails like greater gliders, through to endangered plants. And we have threatened species laws, both federally and at a state level. But unfortunately, particularly at a state level, they're not greatly implemented. Unless they're sort of specifically forestry related or something. And there's a sort of disconnect between the 2,000 odd species that are listed on our threatened species laws and what's protected from forestry. So highlighting and finding these plants and animals is critically important, and the community's shown a great passion for that.